Well, I think it's the differences in the in society and the different systems of oppression that we have around, you know, the world in various degrees. And a lot of times women have been at the receiving end of the oppressive actions and messages and that kind of thing. And it's often been coming from men. And so men don't resonate with that in the same way.
Getting friends, family, and partners on board with your intuitive eating or non-diet journey can be challenging when the messages we are surrounded by are largely coming from our diet culture. But when we add to that, most of the intuitive eating, non-diet, and body acceptance messages are coming from women and directed toward women, this can make it even more difficult to communicate and get support from male partners and friends in a way they can understand and relate to. So this week I am speaking with Jeff Ash about the differences in how intuitive eating and non-diet messages are perceived in men compared with women, and how we can communicate these messages with men to get them on board and to be able to ask for the support we may need. So you're listening to the Food and Life Freedom Podcast. I'm your host, Emma Townsend, a UK registered dietitian and a certified intuitive eating counselor. I support you to move away from lifelong dieting or following black and white rules around food and body and the guilt that can often come with that, to develop a positive relationship with food and the connection with your body. And just a reminder, we are all unique. So please use this as an opportunity to learn and explore. But if something does not sit with you, then it's not meant for your unique self. And if you have any health concerns, please seek personalized support from a registered healthcare provider. So today's guest is Jeff Ash. Jeff is a nutritionist, a intuitive eating coach, a personal trainer, and host of the Men's Intuition podcast, where he seeks to encourage others to transform their relationship with food, exercise, and body, all without restriction, guilt, or shame. When he's not helping others navigate our diet-obsessed culture, he enjoys traveling with his wife, building his own furniture, working in the yard, and challenging himself on ninja obstacles. So let's jump into today's episode. Also, I'm joined today by Jeff Ash. Welcome to the podcast, Jeff.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
I'm really looking forward to this conversation, diving into communicating intuitive eating with men. But before we get started, Jeff, I'd love to just learn a little bit more about you and how you came to do this non-diet and intuitive eating work.
Yeah, sure. So my name's Jeff Ash, and I live in the U.S., Houston, Texas, and I live here with my wife and one of our adult kids still lives with us, a couple of dogs, all that good fun stuff. It's extremely hot here right now. It's hot enough that I felt the need to share that right here.
Wow.
I started out typically, I'm a nutritionist, personal trainer, and intuitive eating coach. And I started out with a traditional kind of way of coaching people with their health and fitness, which was very weight centric. And, you know, it's usually, well, what are your goals? Well, I'm trying to lose weight, I'm trying to build muscle, that kind of thing. And so the goals were around changing typically the size and shape of the body in some way or another. You know, obviously fitness goals were part of that, but I think it's safe to say that most of the time when people are seeking help, it's for those reasons. And so that was where I got started in this. But it was really interesting. The way that I got into a non-diet approach was I was really interested in working with entire families. So kids and teenagers and, you know, the parents also in that kind of as a whole unit, thinking, hey, if we could get everybody on board with the same plan of action and ideas, it's going to probably be much more effective. And in doing that, I got exposed to Ellen Satter's work and started really looking into her work. And that was my first exposure to a non-diet approach that was actually from a place where I understood what they were actually saying, not my preconceived assumptions, because I had a lot of incorrect preconceived ideas about what a non-diet approach was, what intuitive eating was, what health at every size was, all of those kinds of things. And so in learning much more about that, my eyes were very much open to this other approach to health that I couldn't really unsee. And it just made so much sense. And from there, then I just really got much deeper into it and then got my certification under Evelyn Triboli and went down the intuitive eating path. And that's kind of where I am today in my completely non-diet approach to my coaching practice.
Yeah, it's always so fascinating to learn what people's maybe first introduction was to mm-hmm. non-diet or intuitive eating, because the vast majority of the time, those working in this space have trained in, say, health or fitness or whatever mm-hmm. Like nutrition kind of industry is from that traditional diet-centric, weight loss-centric approach. So it's always really interesting to hear about what was that first thing that got someone in. And of course, that first step is usually this, I guess, diving into it a little bit or getting the kind of it in our mind that little bit, but also it takes a lot more exploring on our own after that to really understand exactly what it is. As you said, there's these preconceived ideas about what it is that we have when we're living in a diet culture, essentially.
Yeah, it really is. And I think that that's why so many people have a hard time getting spouses and partners on board, which I know we're planning to talk about a little bit. Those kinds of things can be really challenging because of those messages and how to communicate that. And so many of us are coming at it from that weight-centric lens. Also, I mentioned some of the preconceived ideas and misunderstandings I had about the approach, I think a lot of people also have that. And that's what can make it really challenging because, you hear the word health at every size. And when you don't understand what it actually is and what it isn't, it's really easy to start infusing your own meanings into the words. Same with intuitive eating. People thinking, well, intuitive eating is how I got into this mess in the first place, just eating whatever I want whenever. And it's like, well, that's not what intuitive eating is.
Yeah.
Health at every size is not saying everybody at every size is healthy. That's not what it's saying. And so when you start to really understand what it really is about, it's like, oh, wow. Okay. That makes a lot more sense. I understand that now. And so I think that's an important part of it.
Yeah, definitely. And I would say with that health at every size as well, I've had multiple conversations with other health providers. So working within like the NHS, at the healthcare setting in the UK, multiple conversations with other health providers who don't quite understand it, saying, well, this is actually wrong. It's not health, like it's not possible to be healthy at every size. So this approach mm-hmm. is wrong. And I'm sure that I had some of those beliefs. Well, I know I had some of those beliefs when I first learned about it as well. How can this be right? It goes against a lot of what we've learned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And onto the topic that we're talking about today, so communicating with our partners, specifically male partners, we consider the diet messages that we have or the diet culture that we live in, communicating our decision or what we need in general with our social circles, with our partners of any gender can be really mm-hmm. challenging because we're all surrounded by, as we just spoke about, all of these messages. But then what we're kind of diving more into today is that these non-diet and intuitive eating and body acceptance messages are largely shared by and shared for females or like mm-hmm. feminine populations. So Jeff, I am really looking forward to just learning from you and your experience specifically of intuitive eating and non-diet with a male population mm-hmm. and knowing it can support all of us as well, whichever gender we are, we're going to either kind of be a male or have males in our lives.
Yeah.
I wonder if we could start just generally. Why is it that men don't always, say, immediately resonate with the non-diet message that we often hear?
Well, I think it's the differences in society and the different systems of oppression that we have around the world in various degrees. And a lot of times women have been at the receiving end of the oppressive actions and messages and that kind of thing. And it's often been coming from men. And so men don't resonate with that in the same way. You know, men are have not traditionally been viewed as objects of that are to look a certain way, act a certain way. Yeah, certainly there's society has expectations on men and how they should act and behave, but it's very different. It looks different than with women. Often with women, it's very much about their appearance and how they present themselves and how they talk and what they, how they don't talk and how they react and don't react and all of those kinds of things. And so I think a lot of men, it's understandable that they would not get it at first. And yeah. It's not an excuse, but it's kind of like, you know, when if men aren't experiencing sexualization and objectification in the same way that women are, they're kind of like, yeah, I don't get it. What's wrong with dieting? What's wrong with trying to lose a few pounds? What's wrong with this and that? And why is that such a big deal? And so I think that's a big part of it, is just the sheer differences in how men and women are treated in our society.
Yeah, that's a really interesting perspective as well. If we think women are, or have grown up, a lot of us have grown up with the women's rights movement to some extent, mm-hmm. or this fight for equality for women, for all genders as well, for non-male genders. So we're maybe more used to this idea that we are oppressed in ways, and we can then relate to, hey, mm-hmm. our body is a part of that as well. But for men, yeah, it's been more about maybe them being strong mm-hmm. in their bodies, but also mentally strong. And this idea of, oh, you're actually being oppressed by this message can go against the messages they've been receiving as well.
Yeah, and it's not that men aren't pressured into appearing a certain way, but it's different. And I think we have a little bit more leeway than women do typically. You know, yeah. and also the messages that we're given as children, it's like, oh, you're such a pretty little girl. Oh, that's so cute. So the emphasis is often on the cuteness, the prettiness, the appearance, that dress is so pretty. You know, you don't hear those kinds of things said to little boys. They're not typically, I mean, they'll be referred to as cute and that kind of thing, or you hear people talking about maybe an outfit, but it's a very different vibe, and it's very different. That because the focus usually is not on that. So it's often on, wow, look how big and strong you are. Show me your muscles, you know, these kinds of things. So it's just it's very different. But on the other side of that presents different issues for males also, is the what aspects and what attributes are emphasized and pushed and elevated and that kind of a thing.
Yeah. And what are some of those ways that men are then targeted by diet culture, maybe, and how it might be different from how women are targeted?
Yeah. I mean, it's a big one is on the athletic nature of your body. I mean, that's a big part, where if you're not so athletic, then that's often looked down upon. If you're in a smaller body, in many cases, that's looked down upon. And of course, if you're in a bigger body, that's a problem too. So you don't want to be too small. You don't want to be too big. You definitely need to have some muscle. And these are the kinds of messages that men and boys are fed. And then of course, in the fitness space, it becomes a real big issue, because depending on where you hang out in those areas and where you're learning about it, if you're interested, okay, you know, I feel like I need to do some things about my health and improve on that. And then you start hanging out in some of these fitness spaces, a lot of the emphasis is on building muscle, getting strong, getting big, that kind of thing. A lot of the questions and conversations revolve around hypertrophy, you know, building and adding muscle mass. And so if you want to be lean, but you don't want to be small. And if you're small and lean, then you're just skinny and weak. And if you're all of these kinds of things. So it just presents itself a bit differently in general. Again, it's not the case in all cases, but in general, that's kind of the differences when we're talking about men and women in kind of the health and fitness and nutrition space.
Yeah, definitely. And being a personal trainer as well, you must have really noticed that within the fitness space, the messages catered towards men.
Yeah. A lot of those messages too revolve around biohacking and optimizing things to the point. So somebody might share, because I still hang out in several of these groups and try and kind of present a different approach when in these different conversations. And, you know, one of them is, you know, somebody will share, hey, here's what I'm doing for my workouts. And the immediate response is, oh, that's not optimal. You need to be doing this. You need to be doing that. And what they'll present is something very reasonable. You know, they go to the gym 3 days a week. They do these full body workouts and they say, I don't really feel comfortable not having a spotter. So I don't use free weights much. So I use the machines and here's what I do. And then people will say, oh, well, don't worry about not having a spotter. And it's like this immediate jump into, we need to optimize your training as if they're an elite athlete, rather than, you know what, this is a dude who is just trying to be healthy for his family. And people are already picking it apart, saying you're doing it wrong. You're not doing it right. And so there's all kinds of messages like that, and which then puts pressure on the guy that, oh, well, I don't want to. Oh, I another one, you know, guys using lifting gloves when they lift, and they catch crap from the other guys about the fact that they're wearing gloves in the gym. And it's like, well, I don't like wearing gloves, but if somebody does, what's the big deal? It doesn't make them less of a man. Or if they use a squat pad on the squat bar, you know, that doesn't make them weak or less of a man. But yet those are the kinds of messages that often come at men from other men.
Yeah. And this idea that there's maybe a perfect way to be doing, you know, fitness. And if we're not doing it that way, or we don't have those same goals of maybe physically looking bigger, then why are you even doing it? Is this complete drift away from just wanting to move our bodies? Maybe we're doing it just because it feels good and we don't have these goals of changing our physical appearance in that same way.
Yeah. And I think that's a big pitfall with guys. And I think understanding that too can help us to better understand how to communicate with them too.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. What are, when you look at a male population, what are some of the common ways that you notice, say, body image issues or body image concerns present in men?
Yeah, it's definitely, muscularity is definitely a big area. And you often find body dysmorphia with men, or behaviors like that, where there's constant checking in the mirror, checking in every reflection that they go by. I mean, I've gone through those stages myself, because I used to have go through, my training was a bodybuilding approach and it was for aesthetic purposes. And so during those times when I was much more heavily involved in that, all my training revolved around that. I would take progress photos every day at the gym. I would certain lighting was always better. So I always looked forward to, you know, taking my shirt off in this lighting because it highlighted certain aspects of my body and I wanted to see that. And so those are some common things, but some of the struggles are that when you're doing that all the time, you tend to start to look for all the flaws. Oh, well, yesterday, you know, I was excited about my progress, but today I noticed, oh, I have a little bit over here. Oh, I can't see my abs quite as well over here. Or, oh, my veins aren't bulging out like, you know, this guy over here. I want my veins to look like that. Or I'm too veiny, you know, whatever the case. So we start to nitpick at all those different aspects. And we often judge ourselves against what society is showing us on social media and in the media and in movies and all of those things. It's kind of the ideal male physique. And so it's very difficult to navigate that. But that's, I would say that's one of the big ones, is a lot of guys falling into the trap of checking their body constantly for its size and shape. But it's very similar to how women do too, you know, you're looking at yourself, that overvaluation of your size and your shape.
Yeah, definitely. I think with men body checking, they're maybe largely looking out for different aspects because there's a different idea of what a quote unquote good body is, or a more worthy body is. And it's that classic body checking cycle, isn't it? That we feel maybe insecure about our body, or we want to check that maybe it is changing the way that we want, or it's not changing in a way that we don't want. But the more we do that, the more we are noticing what we perceive as flaws. We're noticing the things that we think aren't perfect or aren't right about our body. Whether that's even exists or not, it's obviously there's no right or wrong, there's no perfect body, but we'll then notice them, or we emphasize these things that we maybe aren't so happy with, and in a way that other people aren't even going to notice them if that is something we're not happy with as well. I'm wondering, when you had that experience where you were maybe body checking or taking photos in a certain part of the gym, was there ever any conversation with you from anyone else around why you were doing that, or maybe how that was impacting you? What was the general feedback, or the feedback that you received from others around that?
Now that's a great question, and I can say no. I mean, people don't. They don't comment on that. I think if somebody is kind of approaching sort of a narcissistic level of that kind of thing, then people will comment about that. But they, in these fitness groups I'm in, people are encouraging progress photos every day, weighing every day, just using the number as a data point. You know, this kind of mentality, it's looked at as completely normal to be looking at yourself in the mirror and looking for the flaws, because, you know, you're looking for ways to improve yourself, right? That's an admirable quality. I'm looking for ways to better myself and to improve myself. But in reality, what we're doing is we're looking for all the flaws instead of looking at the positive things. Look at this area where I've grown. Look at this area where I'm doing better, or I've improved in my life, which is typically what we would give, the advice that we would give people in other areas. But yet with the body, it seems like we're always saying, well, look at all the flaws that, and all the things you need to address, instead of saying, well, look how much stronger I am now. Look at, I can run a 5K now. I could barely walk that long before. And instead of focusing on kind of what the body can do and how we have improved in those areas, we're focused on the ornamental aspect of it and how it appears. And that's just such a common thing in our culture, but our culture as a whole is so very focused on visual, visual things, appearance, how things look, how we're presenting on the outside. Often people associate how we look on the outside with our discipline, our motivation, our determination, our intelligence, all of those kinds of things. And so somebody who is in a larger body or a softer body, whether they're men or women, are often judged in those areas based on that. I know that's, you know, I've seen that in many cases.
Yeah, definitely. Health is very, very little to do with what we look like. And yet in our culture, health is seen as what we physically look like. We're judged based on our health, when actually we know what we look like is largely down to genetics and other things that are outside of our control. Yeah. But certainly a lot of disordered behaviors, such as body checking that we're talking about, and other disordered behaviors around food or what we do with our bodies, are very normalized in our culture. So For a lot of people, we wouldn't even consider this behavior that someone's doing that might be actually really mentally harmful for that person. We don't even notice it or recognize it because it is just normalized. So someone body checking at the gym, that might be really mentally damaging to them. That might be something that they're constantly thinking about. They're really hung up on it. It's impacting all these other areas of their lives. But we just see, oh yeah, they're trying to be healthy and they're working out at the gym.
Yeah. Well, I think one area too with men in differences is that men are definitely not encouraged to explore that and to look within themselves at, is this a problem? Or to get help in that area, to say, you know, I'm really struggling in this area. I feel like I'm looking at my body too much and I'm doing this checking. That is not something guys do. I mean, they do when I talk to them, because they have sought out a coach. and they specifically are struggling with that. So they're much more likely to open up and share that with me. So I hear guys talking about it all the time. But in general, out in public, in group conversations, body image struggles and those kinds of things, that's not something guys talk about. And because they will be ridiculed for it in most circles, at least to some degree, whether they're openly ridiculed or whether guys just kind of bring in the man up sort of a mentality, which, you know, they may not directly say anything like that, but that's definitely the vibe. And that's definitely the implications of what they're saying, is they're sort of implying that, yeah, dude, just need to man up or quit feeling that way, you know, that kind of a mentality.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm sure to some extent that also comes back to how we're raised, how the difference between how a boy is raised compared to a girl. And I have noticed, at least in my social circles, a shift in male friends and my male partner, how they do talk about these things a lot more. I know that's a very small social group that I'm a part of, and the bigger picture is it's still not spoken about enough. But then there's only specific, say, males that these males can really speak to about it, because other males will be uncomfortable. Maybe it'll make them realize they can speak about it, but if it's something that we've never done before, of course we're going to kind of close off and, oh, what is this, and shut that down, like, well, no, I'm sure you'll be fine, you'll get over it, man up.
Yeah. Well, mental health issues, regardless of where they fall, is not something that men are often encouraged to seek help with addressing or to be open and vulnerable about. And that's one of the reasons why I try and be that way on my social media content and things like that, is to be open about areas where I've struggled. The fact that I was in a marriage for 15 years where I was horrifically verbally and emotionally abused by my wife, and yet I stayed in there and I allowed my children to endure that. And, you know, those mistakes, those kinds of things that they're often looked at, well, how could you stay in an abusive relationship and how could you allow that? And it's like, well, it's sharing how that can happen and understanding that, talking about my own health issues and trying to be vulnerable about the fact that, you know, I have sleep apnea, even though I'm in a smaller body, and that, you know, I had to have prostate surgery last year, and those kinds of things, and just sort of normalizing the fact that we all have things that we struggle with. And many of those things are largely outside our control, and that it should be normal to talk about emotional struggles, mental health struggles, physical struggles, and to normalize that. And I think that can be really helpful for guys to hear those kinds of things.
Definitely. And looking at that bigger picture as well, when you just mentioned emotional abuse is something that we're becoming a lot more aware of in our society, for specifically for women or for non-male populations. But at least for me, I don't really hear much of it coming from that male perspective, a male being sort of abused either physically or verbally. And it's because of that, it's very likely to be something that a man is likely to not either be able to open up about, or maybe don't even recognize that it's happening to them.
Oh yeah. Well, and it's not something that other men look at very positively or with as much understanding. You know, there's definitely an aspect to where you feel like that's, you know, if you're a strong man, you shouldn't be being abused by a woman. Or anybody for that matter, but especially not a woman. I mean, that's just the kind of mentality that we grow up with. And so it can be really difficult to accept that and acknowledge that and kind of, you know, it, like I said, accept it so that you can then deal with it and move on and move past it and move past the things that have come from those experiences also. And so there's just a lot of, it's just a lot of differences. It's hard enough for women to admit that they have been abused and to deal with that. But when you also have the additional stigma that comes along with being a man, that can make it even more challenging. But just kind of underscores the importance of talking about these issues and how they affect men, and understanding that, because when you have healthy men in relationships, then the relationship is probably going to be better than if you have unhealthy men. Likewise, you know, if you have healthy women, and you know, it goes both ways. But at the same time, if we're not dealing with and addressing the relationship with food, the body image issues, the mental health concerns of men, then we're missing basically half of these partnership relationships. Well, and if you have two men in a relationship, then you have, it's kind of double whammy there. So I think that's why it's so important that we're talking about these kinds of things.
Yep, definitely. And it really, men's mental health, men's understanding of, I guess, going back to what we're talking about as well, like our body acceptance, intuitive eating, non-diet, that really does affect everyone. Most of us are interacting with male partners, with male friends, with males in some way. And if the men in our world are not coping themselves, if they are struggling and not able to speak about it, or if they have their own body struggles or food struggles, that's going to impact all kinds of relationships and impact everyone.
Yeah. And that's a big part of why, you know, my Instagram is intuitive.eating.men. And I specifically created that to target men with the message, this non-diet intuitive eating message and content, to help kind of normalize it and help them to see, hey, this is another approach that you can take to addressing your health and your fitness and your nutrition concerns that you may have. But also, I want it to be something where guys who may not be on board with it can at least understand what it is, what it's about. Because I think when we can, even if guys don't get completely on board with their female partners, who maybe they are very much on that non-diet intuitive eating journey, but their male partner really isn't, and what they're doing is working for them, because that's, you know, some guys are perfectly fine in the state they're in. I'm not going to tell somebody that, oh, you're deceived or whatever. I'm like, hey, if that's working for you, cool. But your partner's doing it this way, and you need to understand what it is that they're doing and how you can support them in that. And so I think that it can be really helpful to educate men in that area too, and hear it, especially from another guy, because it can often come across as a very female sounding and kind of a girl thing in to a lot of guys.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I'm wondering as well, the talking, I guess, back about how men are brought up to be strong and think of women as maybe lesser, and this could be on a really subconscious level as well for some men, but thinking of women as, you know, weaker, they're not someone who could abuse you because they're weaker, they're lesser. And then if the messages are coming from female population, because they largely are, even if a male might be able to resonate with those, with their language or with the experiences, there may be that bit more of a barrier to hearing it from a completely different population that we've maybe grown up to think of as different, maybe not as strong, or not being affected by the same things as well.
Yeah. Well, and the messages are just almost exclusively coming from women, directed at women. So it feels very much like a woman's thing, like a woman's issue, and something for women, not for guys. And so which makes sense. I mean, it's understandable. When the only people talking about it are women, then, I mean, that sounds like a women's issue. and so that's been one of the things that's been really important to me. And I've seen some other men coming up in this space too, transitioning also from that traditional, typical fitness nutrition approach to a non-diet approach with their work and their clients, seeing how much more helpful that can be, and really speaking out about that. And so that's been great to see more of that happening, but hopefully we'll get more of that and get more men on board with it.
Yeah, that's so lovely to hear. And it sounds like maybe in some ways it's taking the same pathway that when we started getting more mental health awareness, that was, whether it was intentional or not, it kind of targeted towards women, or women were the first to take on that message. And now we're seeing a lot more awareness of mental health in men. And it seems like it's maybe going down that same path, is that a poor relationship with food and body, the awareness started among female population. Mm-hmm. And we seem like we are getting more awareness of how that can also affect males as well.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah. And it sounds like from what we spoke about, just this understanding in men of, or how diet culture affects men, and men's understanding of their own body image is quite different. I'm wondering, as someone, so if there's a man who is struggling, who then identifies that they're struggling with body image or relationship with food, as they work maybe through the intuitive eating principles, so there's 10 principles, and they start out with this rejecting diet culture, which is mm-hmm. more so the information that we've been talking about now. As they move through the other principles and start maybe developing things like connection with their body, does that look different for men than maybe it does in a female population?
Yeah, definitely. It definitely can. And I try and focus on things as practical as possible. I mean, it's very individual. You know, some people are very in tune with connecting with their emotions. They've been through therapy. I have clients who are therapists, and so those can be great, because you know we're already talking about those things. They already understand the importance of how to explore these different aspects of their life and their feelings and those kinds of things. So it can be it can make the process a lot easier in certain ways. But yeah, so with men, I like to focus on the practical things a lot more, I would say, in general. And so very much the, you know, hey, how is this working for you? How has this approach to health and fitness been working for you? How's it interfering with these aspects of your life? Is, you know, this focus on changing your muscularity? You know, what could we do instead of measuring your body changes and weighing yourself all the time to see if you're gaining muscle? Can we switch that focus to just how you're doing in the gym? You know, they actually enjoy going to the gym. And so since they do, then we can focus on those kinds of things, how kind of shifting it from body as an ornament to body as an instrument, and just shifting the focus there. So sometimes I don't necessarily like hammer the issue of rejecting the diet mentality and directly focus on that one, but through our work, through the other principles and other practices that we work on in health promoting behaviors, try and get to a place where that diet culture mentality is pushed farther and farther out of their thinking. And so that their thinking now is on these other things more and more. So instead of saying, this is bad, don't do this anymore, stop thinking this, get away from that, would say, hey, let's focus on this instead. And so for me, I found that to be a pretty good approach. And instead of really focusing on the principle itself of rejecting it, the diet mentality, because I think we can get caught up in that very easily, where we're focused on the negative, like getting rid of the negative aspect rather than the positive. And so if we focus on the positive and replace the negative with that, then the negative sort of just gets put on the back burner automatically. And I know that's worked for me personally a lot. You know, I do ninja obstacle course training, and that's where I find my enjoyment. And it was much easier to get away from the diet, the bodybuilding, you know, getting leaner aesthetic focus, when I'm focusing entirely on trying to solve this obstacle or develop the skill to be able to do this, where, yeah, you know, if I was lighter, maybe it'd be easier, but at the same time, I'm still able to get better and build the skills and develop them regardless of the size or the shape of my body. And so it's much easier to just have that stuff back over here and when I'm able to go about it in that approach. So hopefully that made sense.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, as you said, everyone is so individual, but in general, it can be, if we spend all our time on rejecting diet culture, which for a lot of people, it does need to start there in some way. Obviously, everyone's a bit different, but often it does need to kind of start there. But if we're just doing that, it's like, well, then what? So that's all bad, but where am I? What what will be helpful. Now I feel lost. So bringing in, I guess, positive aspects, whether that's the role that food plays in your life, that's something I really like exploring. Mm-hmm. What role does food play in your life? It's more than just, I guess, energy, calories in, calories mm-hmm. out, which we know isn't right. It's more than just giving our body those nutrients it needs. That's like the absolute basics, but actually food plays a role in so many other aspects of our life. It allows us to have these connections with people, allows us to have our culture, all of these things. So when we, as you said, like bring in these other aspects, and maybe what you notice in males is it might be the other things that they enjoy from the gym, the mm-hmm. reasons that they're going to the gym. We kind of forget why we want to move our bodies, just daily life things that will be easier and more comfortable for us if we move our body in whatever size our body is. Mm-hmm. Moving our body can make a lot of things a lot easier.
Yeah. Well, and too, if men aren't quite ready to start digging down deep and exploring feelings and emotions and experiences that are driving these problematic behaviors, I think it's important to get there. But at the same time, sometimes we can start off with the actions and the behaviors that are very concrete like that, and really start to shift thinking in that way. And then as things come up, then we can deal with those. So I've had those experiences too, where we start off by focusing on things that don't feel dramatically different than what they're currently doing. So mm-hmm. we're not like doing this like whole 180 shift in worldview as it relates to fitness and nutrition and health, but it's more of a gradual, okay, well, just focus on the scale. That's not been working for you, right? I mean, now you said you've weighing yourself multiple times a day, you're checking yourself in the mirror multiple times a day and looking for these flaws. Let's start looking at maybe focusing on some numbers in the gym, for example. You know, let's see how you're progressing there, or let's set a goal, a physical activity goal here. And what can we do here differently? And then that kind of starts to shift their thinking away from that. And then at some point, then we may get to a place where then we can start addressing those underlying issues, as I mentioned. But that approach where, you know, with dieting, one of the big things that we say the big problem with so much of it is this, okay, I am bad, I'm unhealthy. Tomorrow, I'm going to start eating healthy and I'm going to start doing all this. And it's like this 180 shift where we go from eating, you know, to, as a stereotype, eating lots of fast food and eating lots of late night snacking and all of these kinds of things that our health and fitness culture would tell us are problematic. Then we immediately go to no snacking, only organic food, zero processed food. And so of course that's not sustainable, but I think we could fall into that same trap too, going from this very much diet culture mentality to non-diet overnight and expect to make that shift immediate too. And so I tend to find with the guys that I work with that kind of doing that gradual approach, I bring them along, find that low hanging fruit, those small changes that we can make to start shifting our thinking from this way of thinking over to something different, and just gradually unpick and pull apart those problematic ways of thinking. And then they find themselves kind of just over in this camp. And I think that can be a really yeah. helpful approach to take with men. And I think that could be a helpful approach to take if you're trying to help someone to better support you and get on board with what you're trying to do too, if you have a spouse or partner who's not really on board.
Yeah. It sounds like that black and white thinking of mm-hmm. say diet culture and dieting, like today I'm being bad, tomorrow I'm going to be all good. Mm-hmm. And if we go too quickly over the other side, over the non-diet hill to intuitive eating and rejecting diet culture, we can do so with that black and white mentality still, or black and white mindset, which intuitive eating is full of nuance. There's actually no right way of doing it. But yeah. if we don't get there gradually, it can feel like there's a right way and then we're doing it wrong.
Yeah.
And we can reject it then.
Yeah, I've seen that a lot with people that they feel like they're doing it wrong. And I've seen that in some of the yeah. intuitive eating groups. You hear conversations like that where it's very clear that this person went from diet culture to intuitive eating culture. Almost like it's just like, okay, I need to do this right, and I'm not doing it right. Or they think after, well, I've become an intuitive eater 2 weeks ago. It's like, that's not how it does. It's not just an either or. It's not, I'm a diet culture person or I'm an intuitive eater person. I think that there's definitely this gray area in the middle where we're making that transition from how we are currently thinking and doing things to this, to another way of approaching life and doing things differently.
Yeah, definitely. And I know you touched on it before in how we can communicate with, I guess, male spouses or male friends, especially close friends who we want to support us. And you just mentioned that kind of gradual shift rather than going from one to the other. Do you have any other maybe tips or tools that we, especially maybe women, can use to communicate with a male spouse or friend to, when they want that support from them?
Yeah, well, I do. I actually have a webinar that I put together, and it's a free one that you can provide a link to that. But it's specifically meant for that. It's called Intuitive Eating: Help Without Harming, and the whole purpose of it is to help get your family members, friends, but it really is more targeted at male spouses and partners, if I'm being completely honest with them. I mean, that's the message. Is it's a guy talking probably to other guys who are trying to, who are genuinely great guys. They want to support and encourage, but they don't know how. So it's probably not the best. It's probably not really targeting the jerks out there who are just like, not interested at all in helping them. This is really targeted at those who are genuinely trying to help their spouse or partner and just genuinely don't know what to do. And it's like, I don't understand this thing. I'm concerned about their health, and but they're doing this weird thing. And so anyway, in that, one of the kind of the reason for that is that it's often hard for us to be that agent of change in the lives of those who are closest to us. And I think that we can all attest to that, that if you have a spouse or partner, often they are not the most receptive to your correction or to pointing out the things that you may see in their life that are a problem. And yet they'll hear that exact same thing that you've been saying for 5 years to them from somebody else. And they're like, oh my gosh, that was so profound. And you're like, I've been saying that for 5 years, 10 years. And now suddenly when this random person says it, that you just take it right on board. And so, so I think that can be, I think that's something that it can be an important step to, is understanding, that I've been trying to get them on board with this, and it's, seems to be falling on deaf ears. That it may just be that natural part of relationships, which is that we are often not our spouse's best counselor or person to point out the areas where they may need some change sometimes. So hearing it from another place, I think that can be a helpful thing. But in my webinar, I talk about what the big deal is with dieting and what a weight neutral approach is to health, and a brief introduction to health at every size to kind of help them understand what it is. If you're talking about that, sometimes it's not the easiest to communicate that when we're trying to talk to a spouse or partner and it comes out completely wrong. And because there's a lot of emotion attached to it too. Often we get sidetracked onto specifics of maybe what we've experienced. And so the message gets lost in all of that other stuff. And I think that that's where, again, that goes back to that difficulty in communicating some of these things to our spouse or partner, and why they sometimes receive it better from someone else, where there isn't that emotional baggage or attachment coming along with it. Now, I talk about the 10 principles of intuitive eating, just a real brief overview of what they are, so they understand this is what intuitive eating is. Again, because often we don't communicate it very well to our spouse or partner. Maybe we focus on a certain aspect of it and they completely misunderstand it. So again, that focus on that. But so anyway, that's one thing that people may find helpful. But some specific things that I like to do if you're kind of trying to find ways to talk to your spouse or partner, is the 10 principles are a great way for guys. There are 10 specific things They're very clearly defined. And if you look at like Evelyn Tribbley on the intuitiveeating.org website, she has listed out a nice two or three summary or sentence summary of each one that I think works really well. I know the very first time I read it, my scientific engineering mind, when I read through those, it made a lot of sense. I was like, principle one, I understand the gist of that. Obviously, I had to read the book and go through training and all of that to really thoroughly understand it, but it made sense. And then honoring your hunger. Oh, yeah, that makes total sense. Respecting your fullness and satisfaction, all of those things. And so that can be a great place to start with guys is focusing on what intuitive eating is and those 10 principles, because they're very specific, which is something I really love. It's not this kind of abstract woo-woo thing. It's hunger, fullness, satisfaction, challenge the food rules, gentle nutrition, movement, all of those things. And I think a lot of guys can really get on board and resonate with that. I also talked about low hanging fruit earlier too. I think that's a great place to start, is think of areas where you would get the most bang for your buck in talking to your spouse or your partner. So if you as an individual particularly struggle with this, focus on that. Like, don't expect them to come to embrace all 10 principles of intuitive eating overnight. If there's an area where that would be particularly helpful to you, then focus on that more, because each person's going to be different. Yeah. Some it's the food rules. Some maybe they didn't really have that many food rules. I mean, I talk to guys all the time who they have a few. It's like, I shouldn't eat a candy bar every day, but they really don't have tons of food rules. They have other things that they're struggling with and dealing with, cleaning their plate or that kind of thing. But again, I think that can be really helpful is to focus on that low hanging fruit and identify that. And that helps us from getting off in the weeds also. So if we're trying to address too many things, then it just becomes overwhelming and gets real muddy and kind of staticky in its sounding. Another one that I think is a big one is extending grace. Most people did not come to embrace intuitive eating overnight. Most women that are like big time non-diet people, it took you years. Maybe you heard about it 10 years ago, 5 years ago, a year ago, and you finally have shifted away. And it can be really easy to then expect our loved ones and our spouses or partners to, I changed. Why can't you change tomorrow? that kind of a thing.
Exactly.
So really hard to extend grace when something is so hurtful or damaging or putting a lot of pressure on you. But at the same time, I think we do sometimes have to take a step back and say, you know what? It took me a long time. This person didn't go through the same experiences that I did either. And so it may take some time. That's hard. It's hard because we want the change now. There's things that I want my wife to change this tomorrow, but I know I have to step back and say, we grew up very differently. We are different people, and I'm just going to need to give them some grace. And then, and the last one that really comes up, it's kind of a helpful place, is the setting boundaries, and be real specific with those and clear what those boundaries are. And I think that can be really helpful, especially with men who are genuinely trying to help and support. They're just confused and they don't understand. It's like, okay, I want you to be healthy, so I think you should be getting smaller because I think you're too big. And it's not that I'm not attracted to you. It's not, has nothing to do with that, but I'm concerned about your health. You know, your blood pressure is high. And so they immediately are associating all of these things with that. And they're just trying to be helpful, but at the same time, they don't realize how harmful that is and hurtful. And so you can set those boundaries. Like, here is a specific thing that I need you to avoid saying. I need you to avoid asking me about the scale or about changes in my body size or clothes or whatever it is for you as an individual that you need them to not bring up. And it may be things that you're comfortable talking about with your girlfriends or in your online communities, but you don't want them to bring that up. And I think that that's a fair thing to say, hey, this, I just need you to avoid saying this. But then also, what are some specific things you can say? So I know a lot of us guys, again, it's a bit of a stereotype, but I think there's a lot of truth to it. A lot of us guys like specific things to do. Just tell me what to do and what not to do, and I can, and I'll try and do that. And so again, what can you say to help me in these kinds of situations? What can you ask me about? What can you not ask me about to be the most helpful? And I think that can be a very practical way to help too.
Yeah. That's some really, really great tips. And I'll definitely share the your webinar that you've got as well in the show notes. So that some men might, yeah, as you mentioned, get that benefit from hearing it from a different perspective, a different person, knowing that it's not something that maybe their partner, maybe not in an intentional way, but it might be like you're making this up or it's something that you don't understand. But some of those tips that really struck me as being particularly helpful to even some of the women who I've worked with whose partners sound very supportive. But what I often hear from these women is my partner has never struggled with food. So they kind of just eat when they feel hungry. They don't have these kind of rules, and especially not in the same way or to the same extent that I have. And they just don't even understand why I struggle with food. They just can't relate to that at all. So then bringing it back to, I guess, picking the things that are most important to you. You mentioned what is it that's most hurtful to you rather than trying to bombard all of this information that we're hearing. Even if you can't understand it, it's really hurtful to me when I hear people talking about weight loss and this is what you can do to support me. And I think that's such helpful advice there. And I loved the, as well, perhaps obviously a stereotype, not all men are like this, but just having those like set out principles where we can say, okay, there's this structure, this order to what they're doing, even if I don't know exactly what it is, they are doing something structured. It's not some, you know, random thing that's, not evidence-based.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, because that really is that having those specific principles that this isn't just this free-for-all. It's like, no, I'm not dieting anymore. I'm not following these rules. But look, I have these 10 very specific principles that I'm trying to incorporate. And I think that that shift in the way that we're communicating, it can be really helpful for men to hear. It's like, oh, okay, you're not off on just this woo-woo spiritual sort of like looking within and just going based on the feels, because that's not what intuitive eating is. And I think a lot of people hear the word intuitive in eating and they immediately think of this sort of just very unstructured sort of way of doing things just based on how you're feeling in the moment. And it's like, well, there's aspects of that that are part of each principle. What sounds good to me at the moment, what doesn't, and that kind of a thing. And but that's not what it's all about. And so I think that's a really good point that you had there, that those 10 principles really can be a helpful way to say, look, I'm doing something here that's, like you said, evidence-based. I have a plan and this is kind of what I'm doing with it.
Yeah. And it struck me just then as well, when you said they might see it as this kind of free-for-all that you're doing. And from their perspective, they might see that you've started allowing certain foods. You've started giving yourself permission to have foods in the house. You're not limiting the amount. And they just see that as, wow, you're eating maybe more than what our messages around us tell us we, quote unquote, should be eating of this food. You're going to keep doing that forever. You're going to lose control of this food because that's what you've done in the past. Actually, that's a, we have to get through that stage to be able to feel safe around that food. Without understanding that, though, that can look really scary seeing someone else go through that as well.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, emphasizing that what looks like a free-for-all right now is a very structured, specific thing that I'm doing. You know, we do that dehabituation exercise where we say you eat the same food every meal, every day for this period of time to get so accustomed to it that then it doesn't have that control. And that can look like, why are you eating candy bars for breakfast, lunch, dinner, and every snack? And it's like, there's a very specific thing that's based on this hedonist, the research on hedonism and hedonistic responses and these kinds of things. And there's, you know, neuroscience. I mean, this is like a very specific thing that is built on that. It's not a free for all. It's one aspect of intuitive eating and this approach that we're taking. And so, again, you know, sometimes I think that can, I know for me personally, when I see those kinds of things, and I think that's one of the reasons why intuitive eating resonated with me personally well, was that I looked at those things and I saw, this is very different than my impression when I was caught up in kind of the fitness mentality, and I heard about health at every size and intuitive eating. I'm like, that is nonsense, woo-woo craziness over there. You need this structure. You've got to do this and that. And realizing, wait a second, that's not at all what that is over there.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And that's such helpful advice, I think, particularly for women trying to communicate with male partners and friends, but just in general as well. There's some really helpful advice for anyone who might also might prefer that structure too. Mm-hmm. Well, I've really enjoyed this conversation, Jeff, and I know I've learned a lot myself, and I'm sure our listeners have also learned a lot from you and will probably want to know where they can find you to learn more as well. Do you want to just share with our listeners where they can find you?
Yeah, sure. So my website is hopedrivesme.com, and that'll provide links to everything there too. But I'm on Instagram is where I'm most active, and that's intuitive.eating.men. And so you can follow me there, send your male spouse or partner over there. They are not going to get a lot of the messages that sometimes are very in your face about diet culture and stuff like that. I try and keep it very practical, and I bring up those things about diet culture and stuff appropriately. But I think a lot of guys may feel a little more comfortable following that kind of approach. I also have a podcast of my own called Men's Intuition, where I talk about intuitive eating and a non-diet approach. And also, again, from that male perspective, but again, keeping it very practical and helping guys to understand it from that perspective. So they may find that to be helpful too, even if the guys aren't on board. It's an easy way to hear some different ideas and different ways of thinking about different topics related to health and nutrition and fitness. And so those are probably the three best ways to connect with me.
Thanks, Jeff. And we'll make sure we add all of those to the show notes as well. It's been great. Such a pleasure. Thank you. Thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, it's been great talking to you.
It's been so lovely to share this episode with you today. I would love for you to visit today's guest with the links they shared. And for more support and information, including articles, free resources, online courses, and individualized support, you can visit my home on the internet at foodlifefreedom.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a rating and review on the podcast platform you use, and feel free to use the three-dot symbol to share with anyone who may find this episode helpful. If you have a question or topic you would love to have covered on the podcast, I would love to hear from you.